It's a maxim among travel writers that you've got to go solo, that a companion diverts you from the object at hand, that loneliness is essential to opening yourself to the experience of the road. In Travels with Charlie, John Steinbeck insisted that two or more people disturb the ecologic complex of an area. I had to go alone. Except, of course, he wasn't alone. There was his French standard poodle, Charlie. A dog, particularly an exotic like Charlie, Steinbeck wrote, is a bond between strangers. Many conversations began with, "What degree of a dog is that?" Steinbeck also insisted that he must camp along the way, sleeping in Spartan quarters in the back of his pickup truck. "I had to be self-contained," he wrote, "a kind of casual turtle carrying his house on his back." But as has since been revealed, Steinbeck was hardly the stickler for solitude he pretended to be. Despite his claims, he routinely traveled with his wife, Elaine. Rather than campgrounds, they stayed at hotels, some of them so swanky that a jacket was required at dinner. Instead of being appalled by these revelations, I was relieved, because I didn't want to go it alone. After spending the majority of the last 2 decades holed up in my office, I had no interest in wandering the country aching with loneliness. I wanted my wife to come along with me. A former attorney, Melissa was about to retire from her second career as the executive director of a local nonprofit. For 10 years, she had been at the center of the debate about how an island with a storied past should face the future, and now she was going to walk away from it all. Part of me worried that without her busy professional life, we'd have less to talk about. The other part of me was downright gleeful that for the first time in 35 years, she would be free from the demands of a full-time job. It was time we took advantage of her newfound liberty and hit the road. And like John Steinbeck, we were going to bring our dog. A few months earlier, we'd acquired a puppy named Dora for the first wife of David Copperfield, the Dickens character, not the magician, who, like Steinbeck's Charlie, was something of an exotic, a red, bushy-tailed, Nova Scotia duck-tolling retriever, or toller for short. Unlike Steinbeck's Charlie, who'd been a sedate 10 years old, Dora was so rambunctious and freewheeling that we'd attached a GPS tracker to her collar. Whether or not Dora was going to be helpful in striking up a conversation with a stranger, she was guaranteed to make the trip a lot livelier. Melissa and I took out a map of the eastern seaboard and began to plot our prospective trip. Washington's travels could be divided into 5 different legs: his trip from Mount Vernon to his inauguration in New York, his month-long tour of New England, a 4-day tour of the western end of Long Island, a sail from New York to Newport and Providence once Rhode Island ratified the Constitution, and a 3-month tour of the South soon after the nation's temporary capital moved to Philadelphia. We had some constraints to consider. We needed to stay in touch with our children and grandchildren, all in Brooklyn, as well as our 2 fathers, both in their 90s and both living independently on Cape Cod. The longest we could be away at a time, we decided, was 2 to 3 weeks, requiring us to divide each of the 2 longest journeys, New England and the South, in half. We also resolved that our 2 southern trips should be early enough in the spring to avoid the heat of summer. We were following Washington, but I also wanted to find out as much as possible about the people he visited. Did he leave an impression? What traces, besides historical plaques and the seemingly omnipresent claim that Washington slept here, were left of his journey? I made a list of all the towns he'd visited and reached out to as many of their public libraries and historical societies as I could track down. In almost every instance, the librarians and archivists were eager to share what information they had, sending me pages from local histories, journals, diaries, letters, and newspaper clippings. In a surprising number of instances, they even offered to show us around their towns, eventually climbing into our Honda Pilot and pointing out the houses Washington slept or ate in, the trees he tied his horse to, or in one instance, the spot where he helped raise a rafter of the town's 1-room school. Even before we took to the road, a wholly different Washington began to emerge. Not the general, or the president, or the plantation owner, but the human being, the traveler. And best and most revealing of all were the accounts left by the ordinary people, an 8-year-old girl on Long Island, a middle-aged lawyer from Virginia, who had seen the president from the side of the road. Washington and Steinbeck were not my only sources of inspiration for this journey. There was also the example of Harry and Bess Truman, who set out on a road trip of their own shortly after the conclusion of Truman's second term as president.